Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to this meeting of Midlothian Council, which we broadcast live to the internet. I would like to remind everyone present that the meeting will be broadcast live to the internet, will be stored as part of the Council's webcast archive, and will be capable of repeated viewing. I have the discretion to terminate or suspend filming if, in my opinion, allowing filming to continue would prejudice the proceedings of the meeting. Equally so, items that are heard in private or items whereby the publication of the webcast may interfere with the debate, then these areas of the webcast will not be made available to the public. Members are reminded that the cameras are activated by the sound system and they must switch on microphones when speaking and off when finished speaking. Do you have any apologies for absence?
Thanks, Provost. We don't have any apologies today. Thank you.
Order of business.
Thanks, Provost. The order of business is as per the agenda that's previously been circulated, with the exception that item 8.15, Strategic Development Plan for Edinburgh and South East Scotland Report by Head of Communities and Economy, will be heard after item 8.3 due to the strategic relevance of the item. Thank you.
If there are any declarations of interest, members should declare any financial or non-financial interests they have in the items of business for consideration, identifying the relevant agenda item and the nature of their interest. I will declare an interest in item 7.1. Are there any other declarations of interest? You may do so at any point during the meeting. There are no deputations. Minutes of the previous meeting. Note of the meeting of Midlothian Council on the 16th of August 2016. I need a proposer and seconder. Councillor Bryant.
Provost, could I make a statement first? I omitted to say that Councillor Beattie would not be attending that meeting.
Okay, thank you. As amended, could I have a proposer and seconder for the notes of that meeting? Councillor Bryant, thank you, and Councillor Constable. Addendum to minutes of meeting Midlothian Council held on Tuesday the 16th of August 2016. A proposer and seconder for that as well, please. Councillor Constable, give a seconder. Thank you, Councillor Johnson. Minutes of meeting for noting and consideration of any recommendations. Meeting of the Cabinet of 31st of May 2016. Meeting of Special Cabinet on the 31st of May 2016. Meeting of Performance Review and Scrutiny Committee, 26th of April 2016. Meeting of Special Performance Review and Scrutiny Committee of 8th of June 2016. Meeting of Police and Fire and Rescue Board held on 24th of May 2016. Okay, thank you. There are no questions submitted for consideration. I have a statement I would like to make to the Council. I apologise unreservedly to all veteran groups, the armed forces and the people of Midlothian who may have been offended by my comments at the PRS committee. I was expressing my frustration at cuts to the Midlothian and East Lothian Drug and Alcohol Partnership budget. At no time did I denigrate veterans, and my criticism was directed at the MOD, and as veteran champion, it is my duty to call on the MOD to help. If we say nothing, then no assistance will be given. I am absolutely committed to ensuring our veterans in Midlothian receive the support they need. I spoke with passion, as I often do, and I believe my speech was deliberately misinterpreted. I'll now hand over to the Deputy Provost to deal with this item.
So before we proceed, I will ask the monitoring officer to explain the process that we'll follow when we consider this motion. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I think in the circumstances it might be helpful to just outline the process for the motion before discussion starts. This is a single motion, however, there are three parts to the motion which the Council is being asked to agree. The first is that Councillor Wallace is no longer fit to continue as Veterans Champion and should resign. The second, that his role as Provost is untenable and he should resign from that. And if he fails to acknowledge these points and resign from both roles, that the Council should remove him from both posts. The requirements to approve these three parts differ. Parts 1 and 2 would be by simple majority, but Part 3 relates to a proposal to replace a member appointed under Standing Order 4.1, and accordingly the approval of 10 members would be required. Furthermore, the levels of conduct expected in the role of Veterans Champion and Provost may differ, and the effects of the statement made may have a different weight in each role. Accordingly, the question of whether Councillor Wallace is fit to continue in each role should be considered separately and not together. There are different roles, and members should look at that separately. If neither part 1 or 2 is agreed, then there is no points to acknowledge in part 3, and that would then fall. So the proposal to deal with this today is as it is one motion. I would invite the proposer and seconder to speak to the motion as a whole, and likewise everyone else who wishes to take part in the debate to speak as a whole, or the motion as a whole, to all three points. However, I would suggest, in the interest of clarity, the Council should then vote on the points in order, to vote on point 1, then on point 2, and if either or both of 1 and 2 are found to be agreed by the Council, to go on to point 3 with its higher level of 10 members to approve for those roles that have been agreed by the Council to be considered under point 3. Is that acceptable to the Chair and clear to everyone?
Everyone agreed, yeah? Yeah. So I'll pass across to Councillor Milligan to move the motion.
Thank you, Deputy Provost. Again, I'll outline just exactly where we are here. At a meeting, the Performance Review and Scrutiny Committee, and its special quarterly meeting to look at the pressures and the attainments of the Council and how it's performing against its first quarter. The subject came up of discussion, and that was the 23% cut to the Melody Drug and Alcohol Services in Mid and East Lothian Council. A discussion that's been held as well at the IGB, and the concerns raised as to what that cut and the implications of that cut would have. And this was simply a discussion on this issue. We've heard the Provost yet again today apologising if he might have offended some people. I think we're very, very, very clear that he has offended a vast majority who are veterans, and indeed some serving, if not the serving armed forces people that have contacted us. It really is clear, and the simple fact, on the basis of the clear views expressed by the Provost at that meeting, he should not and cannot continue to hold the post of Veterans Champion. The Provost, in my view, has issued a non-apology apology. He says, "I apologise unreservedly if my comments have caused offence. I should have chosen my words better." He has not denied saying the words or explained why he used these words in this kind of remark. It's just that he should not have made them. We on this side have no doubt whatsoever that Councillor Wallace's position as Midlothian's Veterans Champion is completely untenable. The postholder of Veterans Champion has a duty to actively promote the welfare of all veterans, irrespective of the length of their service, and who at the end of the day pays for the services provided. Certainly in a view of number of veterans who have written to the Labour group and to myself, he has no credibility to remain in that post. Councillor Wallace says that he was frustrated at the cuts in funding for drugs and alcohol in Midlothian. The cuts in question have been made by the Scottish Government, and this was simply a ham-fisted attempt by Councillor Wallace to yet again divert the blame away to other places. Let's be quite clear here. If Councillor Wallace in his statement here says that we are trying to misinterpret what he says, and every press release we've put out on Facebook, we've allowed people and we've guided people to listen for themselves to the actual debate in the statement. We have not attempted whatsoever to try to put this across as saying it isn't. We've actually invited people, we've given people their links. Anybody who's listened to this debate on that day can be of no doubt whatsoever as to Councillor Wallace's intent and his meaning when he made these statements. For him to even question the fact and claim that you could be in the territorials for one day and become a veteran and go on to say we'll have something like 200,000 of them in Scotland, I think tells you that's its own story. This was quite simply, yet again, at every turn, when Councillor Wallace believes that there is an attack on his party or an attack on the Scottish Government, he has to defend it no matter what. And in doing so, he has grossly insulted our veterans and has simply let his veil slip. And we would move the motion that's in front of us.
Councillor Muirhead.
Thanks. Deputy Provost, I've no doubt from the statements that have been made in the press that there will be an attempt to portray this as mischief-making as far as the Labour Group's concerned. Every time we challenge an issue of substance, that's what comes back at us when the thing we're challenging is indefensible. This is indefensible. As Derek says, you don't have to look at the exact transcript that we put out, bad enough though that is, but if you listen to the recording and hear how these words were said, I don't think it leaves you in any doubt as to the meaning behind them. Referring to armed forces personnel as these people on several occasions is unacceptable. We've no deliberately misinterpreted anything here. It's exactly as was said and the way it was said. Questioning the entitlement of some veterans to be called veterans, because that's in effect what Councillor Wallace was saying. You only have to be in the TA for one day to be called a veteran. As Derek says, I've always seen that role as collectively advocating on behalf and passionately, positively promoting the armed forces veterans that are in Midlothian, and looking after them on an individual basis where that's required, which has been done by previous holders of this post. It's like being a trade union rep, as far as I'm concerned. And as you, when you take on that kind of role, you have to be wholeheartedly there to support your members. And it's clear from the statements that the Provost made that he is not. As Derek says, the veil slipped on this occasion, and while he might, I'm sure he does regret having made the statements that he's made, but he made them, and it's quite clear that they were passionate and coming from the heart.
Councillor Johnston.
Thank you very much. I've got full confidence in Councillor and Provost Joe Wallace to carry out all of his duties, whether that's in a formal, informal, or on a civic behalf of Midlothian Council. Joe has made a formal public apology to everyone who has been offended by the edited version of his passionate contribution in the PRS committee, and which has been portrayed by Midlothian Labour completely out of the context in which it was delivered. Midlothian Labour should be working for the people of Midlothian, and especially those who voted for them, instead of wasting time and energy jumping up and down with mock indignation and inciting others to send malicious statements to social media and the traditional press. It's been highlighted that the additional demands on the MELDAP budget brought about by employers who are not able or willing to assist their employees and former employees who have incurred issues in the workplace have put additional demands on this already stretched budget. Council has many difficulties to address in Midlothian, and hand-down budgets continue to have a detrimental effect on our community. Midlothian Council will carry on working in partnership with our partners and other agencies to meet our statutory obligations and responsibilities to improve the health and well-being of Midlothian residents. This administration will not descend into reckless behaviour. However, we will continue to remain dignified and responsible at all times. And I therefore move the direct negative. Thank you.
Councillor Constable.
Thank you, Deputy Provost. I also wish to second Councillor Johnson's direct negative.
Councillor Ian Baxter.
Thank you, Deputy Provost. I don't usually jump to the defence of my political opponents, and usually in tedious spats like this between Labour and SNP, I just sit back and open a bag of popcorn. But this one I felt was different. I felt it was nasty, vindictive, and to use football parlance, they played the man and not the ball. Because the ball he was playing, i.e. the argument he was making, was one which actively promotes the welfare of our veterans, contrary to the wording of the motion before us. Yes, he could have chosen his words more carefully, something he has rightly apologised for, but the argument he was making cannot be described as an attack on veterans except by those who deliberately choose to ignore the context in which they were spoken. I was at the meeting concerned, and as the motion states, the debate concerned a cut to funding for MELDEF. Councillor Wallace's argument was to seek funding from the Ministry of Defence for the care of those injured physically or psychologically by warfare. In this, I see a close parallel with industrial illnesses and injuries. I cannot see how that can be viewed as an attack on veterans. Indeed, his wider argument that the failure by the Ministry of Defence to fulfil its moral obligations results in undue pressures being placed on the NHS, on councils, on relatives and on charities, is an argument I would fully support. Therefore, given the Provost has apologised for his choice of words and the argument he was making did not constitute an attack on veterans, I cannot support this motion.
Anyone else wanting to speak? Well, pass back to Councillor Milligan to sum up.
Thank you, Deputy Provost. The first thing I will say is I'm not sure where the council leader gets the edited version. We put out both versions. We put out a complete link to Councillor Wallace's complete speech on that day, and we also sent out a link to the complete meeting so that people could listen to it in any way it wants. I've heard what you've got to say here today, and the fact is simple. The people who have heard the recording, who have listened to it fairly and balanced, the sheer majority of them who have listened to that have come to the conclusion that this was an attack on our veterans. To actually question the right of some of them to be veterans, to continually refer to them as these people, have the audacity to complain. As he put it, we are expected to find these people houses and jobs. What a defence of our veterans. What a defence of our veterans. I can clearly see why veterans are outraged. I can clearly see why the SNP group in here would like to deflect this as a silly spat between Labour and the rest of this council. It's nothing of the sort. I clearly asked Councillor Wallace at the meeting what this had to do with the MOD or the Army, and he came back in and simply repeated himself, continually calling them these people, referring to us having to give these people houses and jobs and being offloaded in us with mental health problems. Well, I'm sorry. I see them as our veterans, know these people, and I think the Veterans Association, who have commented publicly, have been very clear that they don't really particularly want them neither.
Councillor Johnson? No. So we'll move to the vote. We've got the three parts to the motion. So we'll vote first of all on the first part, which states that Councillor Wallace is no longer fit to continue in his role as Veterans Champion and should resign with immediate effect. Can I ask all those in favour of this statement to show their hands, please?
Eight.
And all those against?
Nine.
So So we'll move on to the second part of the motion, which states that his role as Provost, given the ceremonial responsibilities of that post, particularly in relation to armed forces based in Midlothian, is also untenable and he should resign as Provost with immediate effect. Can I ask all those in favour of the second part of that motion to show their hands, please?
Eight.
And all those against?
Nine.
So, if I've understood the monitoring officer at the beginning of this process, the first two parts of the motion have been defeated, so therefore there's no need to move on to the third part. Can I just check, is that correct?
That's correct, Chair, that the two points have both been defeated, so there are no points to acknowledge.
Thank you very much. Okay, so the motion is defeated. Okay. Can someone call back the Provost, please? Thank you.
Thank you, Council. We now move on to item 7.2, a notice of motion moved by Councillor Bennett and to be seconded by Councillor Russell.
Thanks, Provost. As this year is the 50th anniversary of the tragedy in South Wales of the Aberfan disaster, and I can remember it like it was yesterday. I was 19 year old at the time, and you didn't have a blanket till I was there. I seen it in the 1 o'clock news. It was night shift at the pit at that time, and it was shock. It sent a shock through every mining community in the length of Britain. But in Midlothian, for at that time, there'd maybe be about 15,000 people employed in the coal industry, maybe more, I don't know. But there was certainly Midlothian, the same as all the other mining communities throughout the land, rallied in support of fundraising on behalf of the Aberfan families. I met, not that long ago, the Secretary of the South Wales Miners, and I know there's a big, big event taking place in Aberfan to commemorate the tragedy that happened in 1966. And I think it would be fitting, as Midlothian is a former mining community, that we certainly contact, it's Merthyr Tydfil, by the way, no Tydfil, it's Merthyr Tydfil, that we contact them and pass on our ongoing consolences and assurances that their grief hasn't been forgotten.
Thank you. Councillor Russell.
Thank you, Provost. On occasions such as this tragedy, one always remembers where you were when you heard the sad news. At that time, I was a young mum with a three-year-old daughter, and obviously I held tightly onto her on that particular day when we heard the news and saw the miners trying to find out where the bodies were underneath. You know, that village obviously was so decimated with losing, in some cases, a whole generation. And as someone born in a mining village of Newton Grange, I think all the mining communities have got empathy, because all the mining villages had bings. And so it could have happened at any village at any time. So I'm happy to move this, second this motion.
Thank you. Any other members? Well, as a miner's son and coming from a miner's community, I also well remember this anniversary. And I'll make sure that we write to the Mayor of Merthyr Tydfil on behalf of the people of Midlothian. Item 7.3, a notice of motion to be proposed by Councillor Montgomery.
Yeah, thanks, Provost. Like the last motion, I hope we can get a unanimity in this. I just think the Olympics were a great event, and especially the Paralympics. I mean, it's the amount of people that are involved in that who have actually came through tremendous tragedies in their own life and difficulties in their own life, and with great support from their families. And in Scott Quinn's case, good support from Midlothian Council. And I just think it'd be nice to acknowledge the fact that he was part of the two Team GBs that actually did so well in the Rio Olympics. If there's any opposition to it, I'll see a bit more following that.
Thank you. Councillor Emery.
Yeah, thanks very much, Provost. More than delighted to support the motion. I think just looking at the medal toll for both the Olympic side and the Paralympics, it shows that the investment programme that we've had as a nation has actually paid dividends, and more people, young people, with support from families and others, have taken up sports and risen to the top of these particular activities. And it's lovely to see that happening. What's even nicer is when somebody from Midlothian actually comes back with a medal on the Paralympics, because those people that participate in those games and get to the top of that sport really put that extra bit of effort in to get there. And I think it's a fantastic day for Midlothian, for the individual, for the family, and from the support that's been given by, as Councillor Montgomery says, by Midlothian Council. So happy to second the motion.
Councillor Parry.
Thanks, Provost. I'd like to add my support as well. Scott's a fantastic asset to Midlothian. I've met Scott. He's really, really nice, and I also congratulate him as well. I just wanted to point out one minor point, though, is that his name's spelt incorrectly in the motion, and I wondered if we might change that.
Provost, there is actually, I know there is one N, but I did put one N when I did it, but obviously it's been misspelt in this, so I did check it because I wasn't wanting to row when I came here. But just to say, I mean, he has actually had a lot of support for coaches in Midlothian for a long period of time. And this was his first Paralympics, and he got the silver medal, so he didn't do too bad really at all. In fact, he did really well. I remember I sat up and watched it. The race was on just the back of 10. And if it had gone another yard, he'd probably win it, but he didn't. So, but anyway, silver medal is a tremendous achievement. And as I say, there is a Midlothian big connection because he's been well supported by this council. In terms of sports grants, but also in terms of the coaching, which has actually got him to a level which has now actually moved beyond, obviously, because he's at a far higher grade than local swimming. So it's just a great achievement for a Midlothian athlete as part of Team GB.
Councillor Parry.
Thanks, Provost. I just wondered if members were like-minded just to further support the motion and show our commitment to our talented young people, whether we could also write to Scott Quinn and let him know that all his councillors are right behind him.
Okay, make sure that happens. Thank you. Item 8.1, revision of the Council's standing orders and associated documents. Director of Resources.
Thanks, Provost. This report seeks Council approval to introduce changes to the Council's standing orders, the scheme of administration and the scheme of delegation. In the report, the background is set out in Section 2, and I specifically comment on the short life working group which involved councillors and officers who contributed to the revision of standing orders. Today, Council is invited to consider the three recommendations as outlined in Section 4. And if any councillor or yourself, Provost, have any specific questions, either myself or my colleagues, Kyle Clark here and Alan Turpey, will be able to assist. Thanks, Provost.
Thank you, Mr. Blair. Councillor Johnson.
Thank you. The Short Life Working Group did have a series of meetings and they were quite lively at times, but they've been productive and the changes are welcome, and we'll be moving into the 21st century with more documentation very shortly. And so on this occasion, I propose we accept these recommendations listed in the report.
Councillor Milligan.
Provost, thank you. Unfortunately, I was only able to attend one of the three meetings that were there, but I understand that they were very productive, and I think it's fair to say that a few of the issues that came up when there was division, it weren't on political bases. I think I found myself agreeing with Provost Wallace more than I agreed with my colleague next to me at the first meeting I was at, which makes a stark change. We are quite happy in general to agree the principle of this today, with the exception of 7.8, which is again reducing from 5 days to 3 days the issuing of papers. We want to keep that at 5 days, and we're kind of wholly on that. I understand that the officers are saying we'll try and get them out 7 days prior to it, but we actually think that we need to have that five-day target in there. So if that's no change, we would vote against this. I have highlighted quite a few areas that are mistakes that have obviously been copied and pastes. And indeed, for example, in one part, it talks about at the first council meeting the selection of Lord Provost. However, you got promoted, but unfortunately, Deputy Provost got demoted in there to Deputy Convener. So your promotion was at his side. I have highlighted a few areas. Indeed, when I went through it with a fine tooth comb, some historical errors that were in it that are from maybe 8-10 years back, I think Mr Turpie's quite happy to take them on board. So with the exception of 7.8, we're quite happy with the principle of this, and we'd maybe ask that there's a wee tidy up exercise being done in some of these areas just to get that. And if we're happy that 7.8 remains as 5 working days, then we will vote with these changes.
Are you happy to accept that, Councillor Johnson? Okay. Pass that through.
Chair, just for the record, can I confirm, given that in terms of Standing Order 3.1, we require at least 10 members to approve changes to standing orders, I didn't see any note of dissent. Can I just confirm for the record that the subject to the change to 7.8, that's unanimous will of the Council?
Can we have a show of hands on...
Mr Turpie, sorry, I didn't catch all of that. I wonder if you could just tell me again.
Sorry, it's really just for the record, because this is a change, an amendment, a proposed amendment to standing orders, then in terms of Standing Order 3.1, it requires the approval of at least 10 members of the Council. I didn't see any dissent. I was just wanting to confirm for the record that this was the unanimous will of the Council at this stage, and therefore complies with 3.1.
You have the approval of the Council to that. Okay, to change standing orders. Thank you. Item 8.3, the Audit Committee Chair's Annual Report. Director. Oh, sorry. 8.2, Local Government Boundary Commission for Scotland's 5th Statutory Review of Electoral Arrangements, Final Decision for Midlothian by Scottish Ministers.
Thank you, Provost. The purpose of this report is to inform members of the final decision made by Scottish Ministers. With regard to this review, members will recall that the only change proposed by the Boundary Commission, and this indeed was suggested by Midlothian Council, was to amend the ward boundary at Gladstone's Gate at Bonnyrigg, and this impacts on Bonnyrigg and Midlothian East wards, and the other 4 wards remain unchanged. This was considered by the Council at its meeting on the 12th of May 2015, and after a final period of public consultation, this was the final recommendation of the Boundary Commission, and that was accepted by Scottish Ministers on the 14th of September 2016, and in respect of that, therefore, an order has been laid before Parliament to give effect to this as of the 30th of September, and that will apply to elections held on or after the 4th of May 2017. The Council is simply asked to note this outcome. Thank you, Provost.
Thank you, Chief Executive. Councillor Johnson.
I propose we do accept or agree these recommendations to note the changes, although I know that some of my colleagues are a bit disappointed there wasn't other changes, but we're not as badly affected as some other councils, so on this occasion we do agree them.
Councillor Constable.
happy to second that recommendation and note the welcome the change in the border between Bonnyrigg and Midlothian East and the inclusion of Gladstone's Gate in the natural community where it rests.
Councillor Baxter.
Thank you, Provost. While I accept this is for noting, I just wish to point out again, or repeat a comment I made in the past, that although the inclusion of Gladstone's Gate is logical, it makes sense that it's brought into the town of Bonnyrigg, I do question the basis that the Local Government Boundary Commission have used to determine the voter numbers, which in Bonnyrigg's case, they estimate it will drop from about 12,700 voters from the electoral roll on the 1st of September 2013 down to about 12,350, I think, 5 years later. And that's despite a huge amount of building that's taken place since September 2013 and ahead up until the five-year horizon that they were looking at. I cannot understand where they've arrived at those figures, and it just reduces the confidence in my mind that we have in the amount of preparation and work that's undertaken by that organisation.
OK, comments are noted. Everyone happy with the recommendations and that report? Item 8.3, Audit Committee Chair's Annual Report, the Director of Resources.
Thanks, Provost. This report updates Council on the Annual Audit Committee Chair's Report for 2015-16. Council is invited to consider the report of the Independent Chair of the Audit Committee and note that this report was approved by the Audit Committee in June. Thanks, Provost.
Councillor Parry.
Thanks, Provost. The report overall was positive and it was given a great deal of scrutiny at last week's Audit Committee by members and the committee. But I'd like to especially thank the auditors who made it a very streamlined process, and to also thank the non-elected members of the committee who bring with them a wealth of experience and industry knowledge as well. So I'm happy to move the recommendation to consider the annual report.
Thank you. Anybody else? Any comments? Okay. Thank you. We now move to item 8.15, which will be re-notated as 8.3A. The Strategic Development Plan for Edinburgh and South East Scotland, CESS Plan, the Proposed Plan, a report by Mr Johnson, Head of Communities and Economy.
Thank you, Provost. Just a brief recap and by way of introduction. The proposed Strategic Development Plan was approved by the Strategic Development Plan Joint Committee in June of this year. And the Strategic Development Planning Authority Constitution requires that all six constituent councils of CESS Plan are required to ratify the plan before it can be formally published. Five of the six councils have now ratified the plan. In the case of Midlothian, members will recall considering a report on the plan on 16th of August when it agreed to defer a decision on ratification until a members' seminar had been convened to consider infrastructure pressures in Midlothian. That seminar was held on 30th of August, at which a number of infrastructure matters were raised. This report provides further information, including that arising from consultation with relevant agencies. The updated information is set out in Part 3 of this report. It also provides further information on two matters raised at Council in August, these being oil and gas exploration through hydraulic fracturing, or fracking as it is more commonly known, and the potential for heavy rail links to Penicuik. The infrastructure issues highlighted by members are significant, not just to Midlothian, but also to the region as a whole. These regional infrastructure issues require regional solutions, albeit supplemented by more local action. An effective way to secure these regional solutions will include the need for an up-to-date strategic development plan, which sets out not only the strategy for economic development and growth, for housing to meet need and to secure environmental sustainability, but also the programme of essential infrastructure to serve and support that new development. That is the significance of the action programme, which is part of the proposed strategic development plan. And this report highlights the projects which will both directly and indirectly benefit Midlothian. The proposed plan does not require any new housing to be allocated in Midlothian, there being sufficient land identified to meet need to 2029. Therefore, the infrastructure pressures which have been highlighted will not be exacerbated by ratification of this plan. Rather, an up-to-date ratified plan will include the action programme of proposed infrastructure interventions to benefit potentially all parts of the region. Provost, the recommendation is therefore that Council ratifies the proposed strategic development plan for Edinburgh and South East Scotland.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Councillor Bryant.
This is probably the most important report I've ever spoken on. I was at CESPLAN yesterday and spent a long time discussing how we voted in this chamber, and I made them no promises. The proposed strategic development plan, as Ian was saying, was approved in June 2016 by the ScotPlan Joint Committee. The governance arrangements of the Strategic Development Planning Authority for Edinburgh and South East Scotland require all of the member councils to ratify the plan before it can be formally published for a period of notification and receipt of representations. That is where we are. The provisions of the proposed plan in respect of housing do not require any new additional sites, as Ian said. There's already sufficient sites already allocated in existing and emerging local development plans to meet the requirement to 2029. Accordingly, whilst the issue of infrastructure pressures in Midlothian and across the region is significant, ratification of the proposed plan would not increase those pressures. Indeed, ratification of the proposed plan also ratifies the action programme, which is an agenda for promoting delivery of major new infrastructure projects to the benefit of every part of the region. This is one of the benefits which would flow from ratification of the proposed plan. Conversely, further delay or failure to ratify would have significant adverse consequences. Some other items that are at risk. City Deal, on behalf of the six CESPLAN councils, will be strongly enhanced by a fully ratified strategic development plan. The strategic development plan did not require any new housing allocation in Midlothian, and I make no apology for repeating this. Many infrastructure issues will be most effectively addressed through adopting a strategic approach. Investment has already taken place in the council school estate, meaning that it's relatively well placed to face the growth that lays ahead. And finally, for Ian's benefit, with regards to protection from fracking, notwithstanding the current moratorium, the proposed strategic development plan contains provision in line with government policy. I would ask you, please, to consider what you're doing when you vote.
Councillor Johnson.
I totally agree with my colleague Jamie Bryant, and I agree that we take on board the recommendation by the professionals in this council and take heed to what they have advised us. Thank you.
Councillor Milligan.
Provost, I don't think it will be a surprise to you today to see here today that we can't agree this yet. Absolutely not. And I'm going to just take us through the paper quite quickly. In 3.1, we talk about general practice in healthcare. We talk about the solution to that being a new GP practice, opening up in the Newton Grange area, which will be able to take up to about 5,000 patients. It will open in the summer of 2017, late 2017. And that seems to be the catalyst on what will resolve the problems, for example, in Dalkeith, where we'll have a closed list, in Bonnerig, where we'll have a closed list. All three practices in Bonnerig are closed, and in Parthead we'll have a restricted list. Will it help in the new battle area? I'm sure it will. I'm sure it will do something. And I'm very much aware of the other actions that have been taken to try to alleviate the problem with GPs. But clearly in here, the paper clearly says general practice cannot absorb the expected growth in here, and for us to just try to kid on that putting one practice into the Newton Grange area is going to resolve the problems in the likes of Dalkeith, Parthead, Bonnerig and that is actually kidology. It really doesn't. At the moment, we're faced with people who are buying new houses in some of these communities being unable to register with a local doctor and having to go further afield, adding further pressure to practices like Gorebridge and Parthead. So we still don't see here what's been done in these areas, and I'm kind of concerned, in fact, very concerned, that we talk about an additional 5,000 patients. Just with the house building already allocated, that will exceed this. That will exceed this. An education provision, certainly in some of the areas, we're in a complete mess. We're having to take additional houses in Bonnerig. We've certainly not resolved any of the problems so far. The new housing sites that have been allocated are split between the two areas, and both on the main area has no education provision at all. And the only solution we have to that is to continually move kids from one school to another to resolve that. The Borders Rail line, the capacity and punctuality. In the other paper, we talk about Borders Rail management keeping an eye on this, and we have a 25% cancellation rate. And that's when they're highlighting and overseeing it. We talk about the solution to this being by 2018. We'll go for two cars off peak to three cars, and at peak from four to six cars, which would give an additional capacity around 150. If my googling of the size of a train carriage is, the reality is the plan development already there should and outstrip if the plan to get folk off the roads is correct. That's just with the housing that's already planned, because it's not just housing in Midlothian, it'll be housing in the Borders, housing in Shawfair, housing in Edinburgh and housing in Midlothian. So we're going to get one extra carriage during the day to try and meet all that demand, and two at peak times. We'll do absolutely nothing. It's not enough. It's clearly not enough, and we should be able to see that. The amount of new housing, the amount of new people were coming that we're trying to keep off our roads, and we're trying to encourage people to go into public transport, to simply stick on one carriage during the day and two carriages at peak time, won't even deal with the increased capacity from the Borders, from Midlothian, from Shawfair and from Edinburgh. Absolutely won't. That's quite clear. And 3.5, we talk about the transport trunk roads. In here we have in recent correspondence with Transport Scotland, it has been confirmed that the Scottish Government remains committed to undertaking improvement at Sheriff Hall Junction and is continuing to progress the option assessment to identify a preferred option for grade separation junctions. Now, where have we heard that before? For successive governments, I'll hasten to add, for successive governments. It's very woolly that we'll get an option to comment on it at the end of this year, once we've ratified this plan. This does nothing to resolve the serious problem residents in Midlothian are facing trying to get into their works in Edinburgh. When you come to buses, we've quite simply says it's no us, it's the private sector. And I can't argue with that, because that's exactly what it is. And the problem is there's nothing here to say, well, how are we going to address this? How are we going to attempt to try to get people onto buses? How are we going to try and attempt to work? And we'll have a later paper coming up again that gives us even more concern, where Edinburgh Council looked to take big chunks of money out of Lothian buses, which will, of course, not just stifle investment and development, it will actually have a massive impact on the service that's currently provided here in Midlothian. The reality is there's no anything like the answers that we need here to vote to support this today. So, therefore, we will not today be voting to ratify this.
Mr. Baxter.
Thank you, Provost. Yeah, I share many of the concerns Councillor Milligan's put forward, but one particular concern I have is transport, and I've referred to it in the past. The answers we're getting here, transport and local roads, the general increase in road traffic without factoring in new development, may give rise to the need for specific interventions, and those can be considered as part of the Council's normal revenue and or capital programme. That's not a strategic answer. The document before us should be the strategy looking into the medium to long term. A specific example I can give you is, and I've mentioned before, we need more thought about increasing light and heavy rail. We don't need to build it now, but what we should be doing is we should have a master plan which says this is where we would like these routes to go, and then when we build new developments, as we're doing pretty soon in HS10 and HS11 close to S-Bank railway station, that we should be safeguarding routes through those housing estates or close to them, so that when we're building near to railway lines, we can run spur lines off them in the future. But that's not in here. So I'm sorry, I'm deeply disappointed that there is no rational thought given to the long-term needs of our transport infrastructure.
Councillor Bryant.
Thank you, Provost. Where to start? Surgeries—it's a national problem, and also the 5,000 surgery that's been built in Newbattle is considerable, as will be the 3,001 at Shawfair when it's built. As far as transport's concerned, Transport Scotland made a presentation to ScotPlan yesterday, and there's a huge deal of work to be done on that very subject. I mean, the bypass is cluttered; we know that. That's been going on for years. So we can't solve that overnight, Ian. That's going to have to be a long-term plan.
Councillor Montgomery.
Thanks, Provost. It's a question first, and then maybe a follow-up from there, if that's okay. Could I ask Ian from planning, if we agree this today, what's the timescale before we'd be looking at another plan or another set of initiatives?
In terms of the strategic development plan, then that's a 5-yearly review. So the plan would be up for the start of the next review would be from 2018 onwards. In respect of the action programme, which is part of the plan, that's reviewed every 2 years. So if you're looking at specific interventions in relation to infrastructure, particularly in transport, then there's that 2-yearly review of the action programme within the overall strategic plan. And also in terms of trunk roads and Scottish Government, then there's the Strategic Transport Projects Review, which again is reviewed more regularly on a 2 to 3 year cycle, as I understand it.
Thanks for that. I mean, my problem with this is that I just think when it's tied in with the Edinburgh City deal, or the City Region deal, and I think it was generally felt when we discussed this previously that we weren't getting very much out of this. I still don't think we are. And my concern is that if we agree this today, everything that we're looking for in Midlothian is just kicked into touch, and then we'll be starting again from the next one. The local plan reviewed in 2018, I think it took us about 10 years near enough to get the last one to the table. So, I mean, we could be looking at 2028 for the same deal again, and everything that we're actually looking for in terms of road improvements, and certainly from a personal point of view or a local point of view as a local councillor, the rail link to Pennycook is something I've been arguing about for ages. I don't want to see that kicked on any longer than it should be. There is reference to it in here, but it's a bit wishy-washy, and I think we really need to be agreeing with what Derek says, get things tightened up so that we know what we're going to get in Midlothian for our part of this deal. And I'm sorry, it's like, you know, if you're playing poker with somebody, you've got a better hand in them, you play it, and if the other authorities have to get brought to heel by us not agreeing this for a period of time to get what we're looking for, that's what we're here for as local councillors. It's not any more complicated than that. They're getting what they want, that's why they're agreeing it. We're not getting what we need. So we should actually be doing what Derek's saying and actually continue this for a period of time till we get what we're after.
Councillor Muirhead.
Thanks, Provost. I've got a couple of questions here. Apologies, I wasn't able, due to holiday commitments, to attend the seminar where some of these discussions took place, and I notice the reliance that's being put on the 5,000 place surgery in Newton Grange, and as Derek's already said, even at about four, if you take four people per house, you're talking about 1,250 extra houses right up the A7 corridor in Bonnerig. I don't think it will be long before that amount of houses are going to, if you also add the social housing that we're building, it will not be long before that figure is reached. So we'll be back in the same position as we are at the moment with closed lists. So I don't see that that's going to resolve a situation. But from a parochial perspective, I notice in here there is no mention of the proposed extension to Gore Bridge. Now, I know that there was an issue that we were almost there as far as getting permissions for this for the health board. And then the practice building changed hands and they had to go back to square one. Can I ask, has that been abandoned? Because there's not been any reference to it in here. I would have expected that an extension to Gore Bridge would have featured in the new buyer's practice would have featured in this explanation here. The other issue I want to raise is Derek mentions the two trains during the day and the four trains at peak. I think he's being charitable there, actually, because I've not seen four trains on that line for ages. Now, I'm not a train spotter. I'm not sitting on the bridge watching the trains going past every day. Nevertheless, I've yet to see in the recent times a four carriage train, and my understanding is anecdotally that they're actually running during the day at the off peak times, not necessarily at the peak times. Can you tell me how many trains in the course of a day on the Borders line are four carriage trains, and how many are two? Because I think it's lifting from two to three and four to six is all very well, but I'm not so sure how many six carriage trains there's actually going to be.
I deal with the train one. I would just need to find that information out and provide that to I just don't have information on the number of two and four car trains that are operating during the day, unless transport colleagues here today happen to know, but I would need to get that information and supply that to members. In relation to the question relating to the surgery, maybe a director could help on that.
Thank you. The Gore Bridge is one of a number of developments that are happening locally. My understanding is that it is being progressed and is part of the capital planning with NHS Lothian. The other development is the building of the new practice in Lone Head, which will also give increased capacity, and there's already been developments in terms of the use of the building up in Mayfield as well.
Councillor Johnson.
I can say from personal experience, travelling into Edinburgh quite early in the morning, there is four carriages on the trains. I've never travelled in the evening in the peak times, but definitely in the morning there is.
Okay. Anybody else want to come in on that? Councillor Rosie.
Yeah, thanks, Provost. It's just to say, a lot of the issues that have been raised here aren't really going to be altered one way or another, whether we're turn down the cess plant or we agree with it. Abellio, they're the ones that deal with the railway. So voting against it isn't going to improve that situation. And Abellio have already said that they're wanting to try and get new stock, and it could probably take into next year to do that. The other thing is on the infrastructure. We can do all we like in Midlothian here about getting people quicker out of Midlothian, but they'll soon hit the bypass, and all you're doing is getting them quicker to a bottleneck. We've got to work with the Scottish Government as regards the trunk roads and the bypass, and with our colleagues in the neighbouring areas, and the only way we'll do that, I think, is if we pass this and get it through under CESS plan and get moving on it. Knocking it back is not going to help the situation one bit.
Okay. Councillor Milligan has moved against accepting the recommendations, and you're seconding that, okay. And Councillor Bryant has moved that we accept the recommendations, and that was seconded by Councillor Johnson. Can we ask the Clerk of the Court to remind us what the vote rota will be, please? say that those against the recommendations in this report, please show.
Nine.
Those for the recommendation in the report, please show.
Nine.
And the result being a tie, I cast my second vote to accept the recommendations in the report. Thank you. We now move to item 8.4, the Financial Strategy 2017-18 to 2020-21, a report of, by the Head of Finance and Integrated Service Support, Gary.
Thanks, Provost. Provost members, this report provides an update on the Council's financial strategy through to 2021-22. As the report highlights, the core objective of having this strategy is that we secure the Council's financial sustainability, which I'm sure members will appreciate is expected to be an ongoing period of financial constraint, a period of increased service demands, and also a period of uncertainty, particularly around the wider economic picture and the government grant settlement levels for next and future years. In Section 3 of the report, I provide an update on the timing of the announcements in respect to the government grant and also our updated assessment of the level of grant that we might expect, particularly in respect of 17-18. Again, Council should note that there's significant uncertainty around the grant settlement, and as such, the nature of the assumptions there may change over the coming weeks, and in particular in terms of later years, given that we're only expecting a grant settlement for 17-18 come December. We should have a clearer position once the Scottish Government publishes its budget, expected to be some 3 weeks after the Chancellor's autumn statement. But what is clear at the moment from the available analysis is that there will be continued pressure on the Scottish budget, and in particular the local government budget. And that's reflected in the assessments we've made. Section 4 of the report sets out our assessment of the changes that the reform of council tax will bring. Members should note that the proposals in terms of bands E to H are likely to generate in the region of £1.7 million in Midlothian, but based on a distribution of school meals or other alternative distributions, we're likely to see less than that distributed to schools in the county. Section 5 of the report provides an updated projection on the cost of providing services and in turn the projected budget shortfalls that we anticipate. The headline figures there are £9.9 million for 17-18, rising to potentially £40.7 million. I suppose members should note that when I describe the budget shortfall, I'm referring to the position before any of the change programme activities are factored in, or indeed before any increases in the level of Band E council tax are factored in. Given the degree of uncertainty around grant, but also in respect of things like pay awards, I've set out in Table 5 for members' information just an assessment of what differing assumptions on these two factors might bring, both in the immediate and longer term. But those are really just scenarios to give you a feel for how different assessments might impact over the coming months and years. Section 7 gives an overview of the various change activities that are designed at addressing the budget shortfalls I touched on earlier, and what continues to progress these, and to meet the Council's agreement to take budget decisions when it meets in December. At present, factoring in what we know and the increasing council tax to the maximum of 3%, we'd be left with a budget gap still to address for 17-18 of some £5.9 million and potentially rising to £31 million by 2021-22. Provost, I'll pause there in terms of the report, if there's any questions from members. Otherwise, Council is asked to consider the recommendations that are set out in Section 13.
Thank you, Mr. Fairley. Councillor Parry.
Thanks, Provost. Thanks, Gary. I'm happy to move the recommendations set out over pages 112 to 113. And just to draw members' attention to recommendation G, as Gary pointed out, looking to a budget gap of £31.712 million by 2020-21. And it's with this in mind that I just want to reiterate that as the finance portfolio holder, my door is open to councillors from all parties and none. And I know that this is going to become a more challenging part of what we do, and I want to make sure all voices are represented, whether within this chamber or without it. Whether councillors choose to take me up on that offer or turn up on the day with a budget scrawled on a piece of paper, it's entirely up to them. But I'm happy to move recommendations A to H.
Councillor Milligan.
If we haven't got our budgets on a piece of paper, I'm not actually sure what we will have it on. Maybe things are going to get a lot worse than what we know. And we have continually offered, right from May 2012, to be part of the administration, something that's been turned down and voted against time after time. So if they had genuinely wanted cross-party work in, we would have been like other councils and would have had a cross-party cabinet and corporate and council team. However, that wasn't taken up and wasn't wanted by the SNP, the Independent or the Green councillor. It was quite frankly rejected right at the start. However, I think the thing for us here is we do have a challenging time ahead. This isn't any longer just about Westminster cuts. This is quite clearly the Scottish Government have decided quite candidly that we're the easy target here and they're coming for us to cut the services and to pass the responsibility on to councils. That's quite clear. That was quite clear in the additional cuts that were made to us last year, and we are going to have a severely hard time in balancing the budgets that are here. We've been asking since January for the corporate management team's thoughts and balances on this issue. We rely heavily on getting information from officers from the ground up the way to tell us how we could change services, how we could deliver services at a lot less expense, or how we could stop delivering services and how we could mitigate that impact by doing other things. We need to have that information from the professional officers, and we're simply not getting it. We asked in January, we asked again in March, we asked in June, and indeed my last meeting with the Chief Executive and the Head of Finance, I reiterated that point. And the answer, quite simply, coming back, was we've agreed the timescale for budget at Council. I wholeheartedly agree we have. However, we need to be included in information sharing, and that, quite simply, isn't happening. As I say, it's quite a challenging time. What makes it even more challenging is when you look at Table 1 and you look at the increase in bands, and Band E, on the additional increase imposed by the Scottish Government, you would see houses percentage increase by 7.3. That's before the Council put its Council tax up by the measly 3% that is going to be allowed to put it up. That's before that. So you'll see Band E houses rising by £107 a year. By the time we add in the 3%, if that's what indeed we put on, it'll be about £110, £112. When you go to Band H, it's £544 of a rise. When you add the 3% that we're likely to put on, that goes to over £600 a year, £50 a month. And it'll be this council that are posting their bills through the door. It'll be the Scottish Government. The Scottish Government argued for the right to govern and they argued for more autonomy. They've got it. They've got the right to raise income tax. Why are they raising council tax for national priorities? I can actually understand the argument that you have where you say we want to divert money to the areas most needed. That's not an argument that we're going to argue about in here. But the reality is, that's what income tax is for. That's why the Scottish Government should be using HITS block grant or HITS power to raise income tax to do, no simply robbing the people in Midlothian and taking out over a period of the 5 years we're talking here, they're going to take something like £8.5 million out of Midlothian and give us back £3.5 million and the distribution on free school meals. And if I'm wrong, Gary, please affect me. Effectively, that means that this council will be £5 million worse off through that period of time because of that. If we're raising the money through council tax here, it should stay here. It's as simple as that. If the government have priorities, they should issue their priorities and deal with them with the powers that they have and the finances they have. No come in and actually leave the councils to effectively do the dirty work and to take the blame, because that's what's going to happen here. And believe me, it's not going to matter what political colour that you're, that we're in here, no matter what political party you're in, when they bills force through that door, this council and 18 councillors here will get the blame. And just watch social media, Kelly. I'm very much aware that you've seen some of the stuff there. We will simply get the blame. And as you'll have seen all the way through it, they're no differentiating. It's quite simply the council. It's Midlothian Council's name that gets dragged through the mud for this. No political parties, no the Scottish Government, but us. I think it's actually shameful that this area is going to be robbed of £5 million by this action. And I think we should be making that issue very clear to the Government, and I'm sure several other councils already have, Trust Party, and I'm sure many others will.
Councillor Parry.
Thanks, Provost. I don't know if Councillor Milligan's actually read the policy, but that might be a good place to start, because what is shameful is coming into the Chamber and having a rant about Midlothian getting robbed when you didn't understand the policy. So just to make it perfectly clear, and I'm sure Gary will correct me that I'm wrong, is that Midlothian will not be any worse off as a result of this policy. I think the point that you're trying to make about the higher bands is that we won't particularly be better off, or we will be at least in part, but we won't be any worse off under the terms of this policy. And just on the point of the budget, like I just said, my door is open. And since I've been portfolio holder for finance, you certainly never came knocking. And it's really nice of you to now offer to come into administration, but as far as I'm concerned, that is a wee bit porkies. And similarly, in terms of setting the budget and looking at how we transform the council, I'd like to invite Labour members again to take up their places on the Business Transformation Steering Group. We meet regularly and we do look at budget proposals and how we can take forward some of the changes that we do need to make in the council. So I would ask you to perhaps go away and look at a wee bit more of the detail of the policy. But just to make it quite clear, the rates paid by those in the four highest council tax bands will be adjusted from April 2017. And the reason why there is only a one-year budget is precisely the point that you hint to. The Scottish Government haven't got all the powers yet. In fact, they don't get the powers that they need until a year after, which is precisely why we're doing a one-year budget. And some of the uncertainty that's pushing us towards a one-year budget is because of the vote to leave the EU, and I remember Councillor Milligan campaigning strongly to leave the EU, so I hope that he now thinks about his responsibilities in terms of that. There'll be no change for 1.8 million Scottish households for council taxpayers. Those in properties in bands A to D will pay no more than they do now as a result of these reforms. These reforms are progressive. It means that those who have got the biggest shoulders are taking the biggest share of what they pay. And I don't know why you've got a problem with that. Maybe you come for the branch of Labour Party that doesn't like those types of things, but that is the fact. The reforms to council tax meet the key tests agreed by the Commission on local tax reform, making the system fairer, more progressive and locally empowering. There is more accountability built into the policy. We do have the facility to raise overall council tax by 3%, which you hinted to. And if that's how you're minded, then I look forward to taking forward progressive conversations towards that. But don't embarrass yourself by talking about a policy that you clearly don't understand. Thanks.
Councillor Muirhead.
Just a comment initially on the budget scrawled on a piece of paper. Irrespective of how our budget was written, we understood it, which quite clearly wasn't the case for your group. You were £2 million out. The issue, Councillor Parry talks about this being neutral as far as Midlothian Council is concerned. We will not receive any less. That's right. It's no neutral as far as the council taxpayer in Midlothian is concerned. The council taxpayer in Midlothian will pay £1.7 million more, and we as a council will get... Midlothian council taxpayers will pay £1.7 more in bands E to H. We will get back £700,000. The Scottish Government is stealing £1 million from the council taxpayers of Midlothian. The whole principle of council tax is we get 80% of our revenue, our income from block grant. The other 20% we raise ourselves. And that 20% is meant to reflect our local priorities. The council tax is meant to be about local spending. Now, what we're doing here is a national government is using that. They're coming in and they're taking that money. And Derek's right, the council will get blamed for that at the end of the day. When the bills go through, we owe 3% to the people who are paying 22.5%. It will be 25.5%. We will get the blame for that. Scottish Government are stealing £1 million for the council taxpayers in Midlothian to fund their priorities. I have no problem with the priorities that they've got. I have a problem with where they're taking the money from.
Councillor Mulligan.
Yeah, I think Councillor Parry really needs to go and do her homework here. I find this completely embarrassing. This Labour group have put themselves forward for every cabinet position and council position that's been put forward to this council of any substance at all, right from May 2012 right through to now. And every single occasion we've offered ourselves forward for the cabinet, for provost, for council leader at all times. So I'm quite surprised at that. I quite understand where we're with this. And unlike Councillor Parry, I'm very much aware that there will be £1.7 million comes into this council. That will be taken by the Scottish Government and redistributed, and we will only get £700,000 of that back. Will this council be any worse off? No, it won't. It will be neutral. Will the taxpayer in Midlothian and the bands affected be worse off by £1.7 million? And yet we'll only see £700,000 spent in Midlothian. We have areas of deprivation in Midlothian that should be getting that money pushed at them. They're the areas that should be getting hit. But the whole £1.7 million, no a fraction, because the Scottish Government want to keep it and shift it to other council areas. If the Scottish Government want to address these problems, they should do it the right way. In all my time and being in politics, I have never known ever a national government to come in and take council tax or any of the other amounts of money, whether it was the old rate system or whatever. And Jim makes the point quite rightly. The idea of council tax is to allow this council to look at its priorities, to address its priorities. And I'm going to say this loudly and clearly, if we hadn't had the council tax freeze for as many years there, we wouldn't be in the mess we've been in, and it was your party that froze it.
Councillor Coventry.
Yeah, thanks, Provost. Yeah, you know, honestly, I find it difficult to believe that I'm hearing Labour Party defend an increase in council tax in the most expensive types of housing. Three quarters of the residents in Midlothian and throughout Scotland will face no increase whatsoever. You seem to be asking for an increase in income tax. Ordinary people have not seen any substantial wage increases since 2007, and yet you want to lump on more income tax onto ordinary working families. It's unbelievable, you know. I'll leave it at that, you know, honestly.
Yep, I think we'll call this one to a halt. This is this report's only for noting. So thank you for all your contributions. Item 8.5. Reserve strategy on page 115. Head of Finance and Integrated Service Support, Mr. Fairley.
Provost members, this report provides Council with an update on the Council's usable financial reserves and sets out a reserve strategy for Council's consideration. Section 2 of the report sets out the background and purpose of the reserves the Council holds, and these are the General Fund, Capital Fund, Repair and Renewal Reserve and the Housing Revenue Account Reserve. Section 3 then turns to consider the General Fund Reserve, and after reflecting recommendations on the Borders Railway update later on today's agenda, £12.433 million is projected as uncommitted at the year-end. If we maintain a contingent reserve at £8 million or 4% of net expenditure, and as recommended earmark a total of £4 million for transformation, it would leave available towards the year-end a reserve of £2.583 million. Section 4 considers a capital fund for which no change in policy is proposed, and given the significant but as yet unfully costed investment requirements across the capital estate, the capital fund is proposed to be retained for that, and also to provide scope for investment within the existing borrowing cap touched on in the General Services Capital Plan paper. Section 5 considers the repairs and renewal reserve, which, although classed as a usable reserve, is really tied up with accounting properly for the PPP contracts and isn't available to use. Section 6 considers HRE reserve, and as we'll see later in the agenda, the majority of that is required to meet investment decisions that Council's already made in affordable housing, and there's really a contingent reserve of £2.1 million expected there. Table 3 in Section 8 provides members with a summary which reflects the recommendations set out in Section 10, and Provost, today members are asked to consider those recommendations. Thank you.
Councillor Parry.
Thanks, Provost. Thanks, Gary. At the Audit Committee last Tuesday, members heard from the auditors cautiously praised the reserve strategy of the Council, and the administration has continued to improve the overall finance of the Council and allow for sensible levels of reserves that is the result of transforming the way that we carry out our services. I'm happy to move the recommendations and draw colleagues' attention to them, and a strategy that will see us sensibly make an early, clear and transparent commitment to a reserve strategy which puts enough aside to transform and invest in Midlothian without building up too high a reserve pot. But I would like to add an addendum to the recommendations, and I'd like to change recommendation E and add recommendation F. A recommendation E to add, in respect to recommendations A and B, that Council reserves the right to revisit these during the 2017-18 budget setting cycle, given the continued uncertainty in respect to the grant settlement from Government, particularly the points that we heard of in the previous paper, and to F, otherwise note the reserve strategy set out in the report.
Anybody else? Councillor Johnson.
I propose we accept these recommendations as well. Thank you. Sorry, as amended.
Okay, thank you. Councillor Milligan, did you want to come in?
Chairman, I can't see anything wrong with the recommendations here for the officer. They're still leaving £2.783 million in reserves that are usable. Unless the SNP group are intent on using the reserves to hide the problems that are coming here prior to an election, there's absolutely no reason to make any changes whatsoever to this. This would still allow you, and I can't mind a time when we've actually had a budget coming to us that would have been more than £2.783 million needed to be used from reserves. So I'm actually at a loss as to why there's a change to the recommendations coming from the administration at this late stage.
Councillor Baxter.
Thank you, Provost. It's more a question that if the change to the recommendations is made that Councillor Parry suggests, how will the reserves then be reported? Will they be still classed as earmarked, or because they're subject potentially to change, that they may not be?
Councillor Parry.
Thanks. I'm happy to reassure
councillors that it is for no other reason other than that there is some uncertainty in the budget setting cycle. We don't know what the settlement grant will look like, and it is just to give us that flexibility. There's no other untoward reason for it other than that.
Okay. Are we moving? Councillor Baxter, do you want to come in?
Well, no, I'm just reiterating my questions. How would such reserves be reported?
Mr. Fairley.
Yep. We would bring forward within the budget reports that will come forward to Council in November, December, and potentially in 7th of February, an update on the reserves position. Setting out, based on the recommendations that are here, what's earmarked and what's not, and then through the budget reports, Council would have the opportunity to I think the words we used would be to reconsider any changes in that reserve strategy as we consider the reports in November and December.
But would it be explicitly stated within any reports which come to Council and committees that these reserves are not fully earmarked because they're subject to change?
My understanding of the amendment would be the default position would be that we're earmarking some £12 million, leaving about 2.58 after the Borders Rail is available as a contingent reserve. But I think that those decisions would then need to be made by members on the round when you look at what the projected budget shortfall is come November and come December, how the change programme and the options that are presented up through Business Transformation Group shape up and how they affect the budget prospects for 17-18, and indeed as members come forward to make that decision on whether or not to use the powers that they have. You've always had the power to increase council tax, but if there is no restriction in the grant settlement around freezing council tax, then members have got decisions to make there. So it's considering reserves across the remainder of the budget cycle in light of that, all the other factors, if that helps.
Councillor Muirhead.
I'm sorry, I'm seeing this as kind of a contradiction here. We've had a proposal to set down a reserve strategy which sees £4 million of our current reserves set aside for genuine purposes, and the administration is agreeing to that. Yeah? But then they're saying, but we're reserving the right to change your mind in 2 or 3 months' time when the budget position is known. And you're saying you're no doing it so that there's a war chest for you to write off the debt come the approach to the election next year. Are you then saying that you would only use that £4 million should the current projections for the budget prove to be larger than that? Is that what you're saying? The budget gap?
There is no conditions attached to that recommendation. So it just is what it is. It's about just not boxing ourselves into a situation. We've got papers further down the agenda that look at demand-led pressures that we may or may not need some money from. So in recent budget discussions that we've had here, I mean, Labour Group have been kind of shouting about using more reserves. There's not a grand plot and scheme here. It's just about not boxing ourselves into something that we've not got a crystal ball and we didn't know what the grant settlement is going to be. So I didn't want to tie ourselves in a position that we can't get ourselves out of. I just call that good financial planning.
Councillor Muirhead.
I understand there's an element of boxing, and that's what this reserve strategy is about, making sure that we have the money for purposes that have been identified and we all agree that they're needed for. So that is, I guess, is the intention to some extent of this. If you're saying we need to wait to see what the settlement is, we shouldn't box ourselves in prior to that. What I'm asking you is, are you saying that if the settlement results in a bigger budget gap, then we would use the reserves for that purpose only, if the budget gap is more than is being projected here?
That's not what I'm saying. I'm not saying that it's not a cause and effect situation, no. Happy to clarify.
Councillor Mulligan, did you want to come in?
With that, if Councillor Parry was actually saying that we got information that the budget gap was a lot wider than what we had thought, then the reality is it would be prudent to try and leave herself some leeway. But she's no. She's quite clearly saying that we need a £4 million reserve and earmark £4 million to change, which will incorporate the council's transformation. She's then going to say as well, just in case we can't do that, we're going to leave White to come in and dig into that additional £4 million. Well, last year they were sitting here arguing with us about spending £500,000 to keep police forces to try and look at other areas when we had a massive budget surplus and telling us that we were being reckless. I don't know how much more reckless you could be than get to yourself to the stage, leaving yourself less than what Councillor Parry's just reminded us that our external auditors and internal auditors have recommended that we should have a 4% net expenditure reserve as a safety limit. Therefore, no, we would move the recommendations from the corporate management team.
Councillor Baxter.
Yeah, I'm confused by this that's been thrown in at the last minute. It's a contradiction in terms, if you like, to possibly earmark funds, because once the possibility is there of it being removed, it then sends a signal to those to whom the funds have been allocated that they need to maybe spend it and allocate it quickly, or otherwise it may go. I feel it's a clear direction here that I'm happy with the recommendations as they stand, and I think that to start muddying the waters a bit will send possibly the wrong signals to different departments which are involved.
Are you seconding then Councillor Milligan's proposal to accept the recommendations? Yeah. Okay. We have two recommendations, either to accept the recommendations as they stand or to accept them as amended by Councillor Parry. Those in favour of the recommendations as they stand, please show.
Nine.
Those in favour of the recommendations as amended by Councillor Parry, please show.
Nine.
And I cast my second vote to accept the recommendations as amended by Councillor Parry. We want to item 8.6, Financial Monitoring 2016-17. Page 121, and this will be led by Mr. Fairley.
Thanks, Provost. Provost, this report sets out the performance against the revenue budget for the General Fund at quarter one. Summarised in section two and detailed in the appendices. Summarised in appendix one and detailed in the appendices, we're projecting a net underspend for the year of a net overspend in the year of £558,000 or 0.28 of the revised budget. Section 2.3 sets out the movement on the general fund reserve for the year, which gives rise to the figures that we were quoted in the earlier report. Provost, I won't say very much at the moment. The detail is in the appendices. I'm happy to take any questions member may have. Otherwise, Council is asked to consider the contents of the report and the context of the financial strategy.
Thanks, Mr. Fairley. Councillor Parry.
Thanks, Provost. I think Gary's touched on that very well. The nature of council business, it's very hard to predict demand-led services, one of the conversations that we've just been having. Slippages are always disappointing, but I think in these particular circumstances it's understandable and further strengthens the argument that our financial strategy is the right one. So I'm happy to move the recommendations to note the contents of the report.
Thank you. Anyone else? Okay, the contents of this report are just for noting. We move on to item 8.7, page 137. The General Services Capital Plan 2016-17 to 2020-21. The Head of Finance and Integrated Service Report, Mr. Fairley, to lead.
Thanks again. This financial report sets out the position with the capital plan. Section 2 sets out the impact of changes to project phasing and projects approved by Council and puts forward two further projects presented for approval today. Section 3 identifies the variations against the budget in the current year. Section 4 then goes on to consider the pressures for future years' capital budgets, and that's partly addressed through the inclusion of provisional sums for each of the strands of assets, whether roads, vehicles, digital assets, etc. Over the life of the plan, that investment, the provisional sums allocated totals £33.5 million. As a consequence of all the changes, the plan provides over its life for expenditure in our asset base of £128 million, for which we have funding of £77 million and therefore a net borrowing requirement of £51 million. Section 6 considers the position of the overall borrowing cap on capital debt, and that highlights, our assessment highlights, that there is limited headroom within the current cap for further investment over the life of the plan. As such, any new investment would require to be evaluated and prioritised to keep investment levels within the cap, or alternatively, if that cap is increased, there would be a knock-on impact on the borrowing costs that are provided for in the revenue budget and a direct impact on the budget projections touched on in the financial strategy earlier. Provost, today Council is asked to consider the recommendations that are set out in Section 8.
Thank you. Councillor Parry.
Thanks, Provost. Thanks, Gary. I'm happy to move the recommendations, and as Gary also highlighted, to draw members' attention to 7.2, the section on risk, and just to point out that we do have limited headroom. And, you know, we aren't, as the Labour Party would like to point out, a land of milk and honey with millions in the bank. You know, we are close to our borrowing caps, and going forward we need to be more cautious than ever about our financial decisions. So I'm happy to move recommendations forward, and I'm further happy to that as this administration taking these important decisions, as it's clear the Middle Lothian Labour Party approach would have us bankrupt.
Thank you. Anyone else? Council happy to accept this report? Thank you. Item 8.8 on page 151, the Housing Revenue Account, Capital Plan and Revenue Budget 2016-17 to 2021-22. The Head of Finance and Integrated Service Report, Mr Fairley.
Provost, members, this report provides you with an update on the financial aspects of managing and operating the Housing Revenue Account. The capital investment plans provide for investment over the period to 2021 of £119 million. And that comes with a net borrowing requirement of £113 million, the majority of that being investment in new housing and also investment in the existing housing stock. We project over the period to 2030-31, HRA revenue and expenditure and debt financing costs will come to some £545 million. And at the end of that period, we're projecting that the HRA reserve will reduce to some £2.1 million. So leaving really over the life of the financial projections a contingent reserve of £2.1 million. That position is heavily dependent, and the investment is heavily dependent on future year's rent strategies. Council has approved a 5% increase for the year we're in and for 17-18, and future years assume a 3% rent increase in terms of our financial projections. In terms of performance in the year on both general services, HRA capital plan and the revenue account, there is no material variations to report. So again, Provost, Council is asked to consider the recommendations, which this time are set out in Section 5 of the report.
Thank you, Mr Fairley. Councillor Parry.
Thanks, Provost. Thanks, Gary, for this paper. I think it shows the administration's dedication to financial prudence, but also a drive to make Midlothian a better place, investing not only in future housing, but in current housing, and managing our funding well to enable us to continue this into the future as well. So I'm happy to move recommendations as detailed on page 154.
Council happy to accept the recommendations in this report. Thank you. Item 8.9 on page 165, Midlothian Integration Joint Board, Finance Assurance Update, Head of Finance and Integrated Service Support, Mr Fairley.
Thanks, Provost. You'll be glad the last of the financial reports. This one just gives an update on the financial assurance work we've carried out in respect of delegation of resources to the IJB, which happened from April 16, and simply Council's asked to note the recommendations again set out in Section 8.
Thank you. Councillor Johnson.
Thank you very much. I propose we agree the recommendations to note the financial assurance process and ongoing work to subsume it all into everyday work within the financial team.
Councillor Constable.
Happy to second the recommendations.
Council happy to accept the recommendations in this report. Thank you. Next item, 8.10, Borders Railway Update. This is a separate paper. Maximising Economic Benefit in Midlothian, a report by Mr Laurie, the Chief Executive.
Thank you, Provost. This report provides members with an update on the Borders Railway and also seeks approval for additional funding to support a range of ambitious projects which contribute to maximising the long-term economic benefits of the railway to Midlothian. The railway has been open for just over a year now. During that period, the Council has been working with partners on the Blueprint Group to develop, support and fund a number of projects and events relating to the opening celebrations, tourism marketing, a tourism audit, inward investment support and key joint posts to drive forward project, economic and tourism activity in the railway corridor. Our aim is to maximise economic benefit to Midlothian and in doing that ensure that resources from the Scottish Government's Blueprint Fund are brought into Midlothian. With that in mind, we are involved in the development of a series of project proposals, some of which relate to the whole railway corridor, others which are Midlothian specific. And the 12 projects currently within scope are set out at paragraph 4 of the report. And these include refurbishment and reuse of the former Newton Grange and Gorbridge Station buildings, Gorbridge Town Centre Public Realm improvements building on the success of the Gorbridge Conservation Area Regeneration Scheme, a master planning programme looking at economic development and regeneration potential at key sites, focusing on Newton Grange and Stop Hill, the Midlothian and Borders Destination Development Project, which is supporting tourism businesses to develop new products and services linked to the Borders Railway, and that is led by the Midlothian Tourism Forum. Borders Rail Access initiatives relating to the creation of a network of walking and cycle paths along the rail corridor with improved links between stations and other sites. A Borders Railway Investment Fund, Borders Railway Business Improvement Districts Corridor, and the development of business incubator units along the line of the railway. In addition to this, there are three projects relating to the National Mining Museum of Scotland. These are part of the museum's strategic plan, which came before Council earlier this year. More detailed work is ongoing at officer level within the Council to establish the various stakeholders and partnerships to deliver these projects, including the costing of schemes and the commitments on funding. Inevitably, some projects will be ready for implementation at an earlier stage than others. And there are clearly financial implications for the Council in continuing to develop support and provide match funding for projects if we are to play our full part in ensuring the economic success of the railway. And specific funding requests are set out in Section 6.1 and in the recommendations. In the report, I also touch on two matters that have been matters of concern to officers and members alike. The first we touched on in one of the earlier reports, which is about Borders Rail performance. And we've previously spoken about the overall level of patronage of the railway has been substantially higher than had been projected, particularly at the Borders end of the railway. And that has given rise to complaints during the first year of operation vis-à-vis overcrowded trains, poor punctuality, and some trains not stopping at scheduled stations. These are matters I've taken up directly with Phil Verster, who's the Managing Director of ScotRail Alliance. He has assured me that ScotRail accept that the current situation is not good enough. There are the increases in the size of trains, 50% increases in the size of trains, which will come into effect later in 2017 and into 2018. That will clearly have an impact on capacity. In terms of performance itself, I mean, I note that in the most recent period, the most recently published figures, and that is the 4 weeks to 17 September, 85.9% of trains arrived on time using the standard industry measure of that. That is an improvement compared to 76.3% in the previous period, but we would clearly still want and expect to see further improvements in that, as that is still below the ScotRail average. And I've certainly made my views on that very clear to ScotRail, and I think they understand our concerns. The other issue at paragraph 5.2 is the Midlothian Explorer tourist bus. It was agreed to run this for a pilot period from April to October this year. And the proposals in respect of this, I think, were developed in good faith with regard to other similar projects and in consultation with our tourism providers and with fares having been benchmarked. Despite that, I regret to say it has been a huge disappointment with very low usage, and attempts to improve performance over the period of the pilot have not worked. As a pilot, it has failed, and clearly we need to learn the lessons of that. I want now to turn to the recommendations in the report, which are set out at paragraph 8. And I suppose just in moving towards them, I think despite these setbacks that I mentioned, there has been a lot of positives in relation to Borders Rail in the first year. And there have been hundreds of thousands of people that have used hundreds of thousands of journeys between Midlothian and other destinations, so that this has made a significant impact. What we now need is a coordinated programme of specific projects to ensure that we deliver the potential for substantial and sustainable economic uplift for the communities along the length of the railway, and the recommendations have been developed in that context. So today we're asking members to note progress in seeking to maximise the economic benefits, to note the commitment from Abellio ScotRail to address current operational matters, to approve a supplementary estimate from the available general fund reserve of £200,000 as the council's contribution to both the master planning work and to provide revenue funding in respect of ongoing project development work, to approve the allocation of provisional budget of £250,000 in the general services capital plan to provide the council's funding contribution to these projects as they develop and are brought forward, and also to require regular reports on progress with the operation of the railway. Thank you, Provost.
Thank you, Mr. Laurie. Councillor Bryant.
Thanks, Provost. Thanks, Kenneth. In summary, the new Borders Rail has had an immediate beneficial impact on the communities in Midlothian and Scottish Borders, providing a much quicker access to and from the centre of Edinburgh. The high levels of popularity, patronage have resulted in some specific operational issues, and these can be regarded as relatively short term, and Abellio and ScotRail have given commitments to address these issues. Myself and Councillor De Vink went down to Gala Shields to see a seminar by Abellio, and we heard some interesting facts there. The new rolling stock is going to be built in Japan, and that will be 2018, and there will be four carriages per train, we are told. The timings, now maybe Peter can correct me if I'm wrong, it's 29 seconds you get to get from the train stopping to moving out of the station again. Now, it doesn't sound a long time, but... 25. What? 29 seconds. It's definitely 29 seconds. I made it. And also something else that you might be interested in, I didn't pay my ticket going to Gala Shields, and I haven't claimed it as an expense. There's something needs to be done about that. I mean, I sat there with my money in my hand and nobody came. The focus now needs to be on a coordinated programme of specific projects to support the agreed aims objectives and priorities of the Blueprint Strategy. And I would ask the Council to accept the recommendations as outlined by Kenneth, especially the £250,000 in the General Services Capital Plan to provide our funding contribution. Thank you.
Councillor Emery. Thanks, Provost. Just I've got three issues to raise, and I want to move a course of action as well on one of the recommendations. Firstly, just to say that happy to see that the Blueprint Leadership Group have been working tirelessly, and we've got five projects that the Chief Executive has reported on. It's with regard to item 4.2, in the last sentence there, it talks in terms of the focus not just being on the Borders Rail, but on the corridor and indeed the catchment area. And it's really a question and a comment at the same time. The question being, does that mean that in actual fact those communities that are expected to play their part will be able to apply for and be considered for some grant? Now, use an example. It talks in terms of community benefit to communities. Now, we have planning applications that come up, and I'll use Rosewell and use Bonnyrigg as two housing applications that come up. As part of the Section 75 agreement, we expect money to be taken from the developers to pay towards the Borders Rail line. And all I'm asking for is consideration be given to those communities so they can actually put a bid in to that Blueprint Leadership Group. So that's the first thing I would certainly like to see. And if it's not possible, then I'd like to ask the question, well, why are we taking money from housing developments if we're not prepared to put anything back into the community? The second one is, I suppose, under five, we've been a victim in a way of our own success, and that was there was so much publicity for the Borders Rail that you didn't need to be a rocket scientist to understand that everybody would come charging to use that particular train. And the first few months of that was just absolutely dire, because the people that would use it, the commuters that we want to use it day in, day out, actually half the time couldn't get on because we were actually pushing the tourism agenda. Fundamental stake, as far as I'm concerned, and I've raised that with Phil Vester in a different function. I also cannot believe that nobody understood that the data sets on railway patronage, passenger patronage, hadn't actually been factored in to a brand new line that had been closed since 1969 and had 30 years of a campaign group to actually get the Borders line reopened. And I really find it very, very difficult to understand the logic and common sense that putting on a train set was fine. Not actually having the number of coaches within that train set is something that's fundamentally wrong. And I don't accept, and I know we're being asked, and that's why I want a course of action, Provost, if the Council agree, but I don't accept it's good enough to acknowledge the commitment by Abellio. I think we've got to be in there and saying, you're going to have to do something as soon as possible. Now, I understand in different actual fora that I attend that there ain't any rolling stock. I think we all understand that around the table here, but the people out there don't understand that, genuinely don't understand that. And if you're trying to get the step change from taking people out their private car and using public transport, then once they might stand at a station and see a train going by and think, oh, that's disappointing. Twice, they might even just about accept that. But three times and you're back in your car. And I think we've got this fundamentally wrong. Now, we've spoken earlier on about the amount of housing development that's going to be going along right along that A7 corridor, and we're expecting people to use alternative modes of transport. Now, at this moment in time, and it's another paper we'll come to, we actually have a bus service. For how long, who knows, depending on what outcomes we get there. But the fundamental point is that two coaches going up to three and four going up to six isn't going to be good enough. Peak time travel, and I'll just example it.
Borders councils put through their local plan. In fact, there's thousands of houses coming along that Borders rail line corridor. Edinburgh Council is just going to get hit with something like 2,500 houses in the east stroke south of Edinburgh, right up Brunston. Now, lo and behold, New Craig Hall Station and Brunston Station being there, two stations on the Borders line. Coming from Edinburgh, after you've finished working or you've been up for a retail therapy job, you'll actually jump in the train, or you won't, because those people coming back are going to get off at Brunston or New Craig Hall coming back. So I don't think the number of the increase in the number of coaches that we're going to have on these particular train sets is going to be enough to meet that kind of demand that we all want to see. And I think we really have to make representation now, because as they sit down and look at their plans about where they're going to put the new trains, and we get, by the way, the cascading effect, because we're not getting the new ones, by the way, we're getting the maybe refurbished, but certainly not new, coming onto that Borders rail line, then we've got to be in there from the outset and saying we need more. Now, on the third issue, and you can't blame me, Provost, for having a bit of a go about this one, is we look at the ghost bus tour. The actual boat bus that has run for the last 6 months, and you look in there and you actually look again and you see it is like a ghost bus, because there's nobody on it. Now, we did warn, we said at the time, it's a great idea when you've got plenty of money in the cash books, and of course we've heard from Councillor Parry already that money is tight, and we all accept that. But I'll tell you right now, the people of Auchendinny that just in this next week, or right now, have found that the number 40 ain't going to go through Auchendinny anymore, aren't too pleased that we've actually wasted money on that. The people in other communities, Rosewell, the 49's been cancelled or certainly cut back from 20 minutes to 30 minutes. Same in Bonnyrigg, down at Dander Hall, Newton Village and the likes. All these places, communities that don't enjoy a regular bus, where we as a council could be putting money in there to support bus services, it hasn't happened. And I have to say, I can't leave it. You know, you maybe thought, Councillor Rosie, it was a good idea at the time. We've all had them over our lifetime of good ideas that go terribly wrong. Well, on this occasion, I think we've got to lick our wounds and start to look to put money back in to our local communities, because, in actual fact, they need bus service. And we're going to come to another item on the agenda where we're going to be talking about the future of our bus services. So with that, Provost, just that little amendment, that instead of noting what Abilio's actions are, is we actually ask the Chief Executive and even, dare I say, the Leader of the Council as well, in conjunction, so it's officer and politically led, to go to Abilio and articulate the rationale about actually making sure that we have more carriages on the train sets, and hopefully even, dare I say, indeed, more trains in the future, because if we don't, then all that we talk about in this chamber goes for nothing when we talk about making that step change of taking out their people out of their cars and putting them onto public transport. Thanks very much.
Chief Executive.
Thank you, Provost. I mean, quite a number of points. I'm not necessarily well qualified to speak on all of that, but no doubt colleagues will step in if they feel the need. But a couple of things I'd like to say. I mean, firstly and specifically, we are developing projects which will be able to benefit from the Blueprint Fund. That Blueprint Fund was set up some 18 months ago or so now. There was an initial focus quite clearly on the Great Tapestry project and also the Tweedbank Business Park. And what I absolutely want to ensure, and I think all members have been very supportive of this, is that we make sure Midlothian gets a proper share of that. And if we're going to do that, and in view of the criteria that are applied to the Blueprint Fund, that funding will go into projects and communities which are close to the railway line. There is no doubt about that an attempt to get Blueprint funding for some of these other communities you refer to, Councillor Imrie, I don't think is likely to succeed. That doesn't mean as a council we shouldn't be supporting projects in that area, of course, but I think in terms of the relatively narrow criteria associated with the Blueprint Fund, these will apply very much along the line of the railway, and I want to ensure that this council and its partners through these projects accesses that fund. In terms of the visitor, the numbers of passengers, it is a broader issue, and these pressures are evidenced right across Scotland, indeed right across the UK. It's not for me to speak for ScotRail, but I think it's fair to say that they would argue that the timing of their taking on of the franchise mitigated their or limited their ability to respond to that demand as quickly as all of us would have wished to see. And in terms of maintaining the pressure on ScotRail and using, you know, whatever approaches we can, either in the officer or member side, or indeed using other approaches to do that, absolutely, I agree that we that was entirely appropriate. Indeed, it would be my intention, regardless of the precise wording of that that recommendation. In terms of the Explorer bus, you know, it hasn't worked, and you know, hands up on that. And I don't think that can be disguised or hidden in any way. I think as a council, our record on delivering projects, and this is a record that goes back over a long, long period, is actually a very good one. And occasionally things don't work. We need to learn the lessons from that and move on. I'm not sure if that deals with all the points, Provost, but happy to come back if necessary.
Councillor Mulligan.
Thanks, Provost. I think that's the understatement of the month, Kenneth, that the tourist bus hasn't worked. Half a passenger per journey. I think it was clear for everybody to see here, absolutely clear for anybody who was looking at this when we agreed to spend £65,000 of public money on subsidising a bus for effectively nobody to get on it. And how we're having to go to ourselves far, we can get out quick claws, I have absolutely no idea. As Russell says, at the same time as we are sending this bus round in this great big long route, the 40 bus, for example, that currently services Auchendinny, goes to Roslyn Chapel, goes down to beside the Dukes, at Buccleuch, the county, goes past the Lairdon. Now, some of the areas right up past Balson Glen, the areas that are actually earmarked with the tourist bus, where you could get on a lot cheaper, where, to be quite honest, if we had got more passengers onto it, it might have made it commercially viable, and we might not have seen the cuts to Auchendinny and to Pennycook and the areas. The same for the 49, which goes into Edinburgh or goes up to the historical village of Rosewell, where there are some beautiful sights to be seen. And the reality is that money could have been better spent helping these services, which were already running commercially, and to make sure that our existing customers had decent services. Even the 39 could have been helped with that, where we have one bus an hour that sort of goes round our villages. The reality is we could have maybe looked at increasing that with this money. I think a blind man could have seen when we agreed this, it was never going to work, and especially with the cost and the way it was run. I would therefore hope, given the fact that it seems we've dived at this, that any further projects in the detail of that would come back for members to comment on before they're approved, because it just seemed that there was a grab to look to be doing something to help the tourist levels. I think, Kenneth, you've answered the area, but I'm going to stress it again. The solution in front of us just now, he gone two cars and four cars to three cars and six cars. Each car, additional car, having a capacity around 75, as I understand it, and I'm able to be corrected on that because I simply Googled it, and that's what it came up with. I don't think it's going to be anywhere near adequate, just to deal with the increased house numbers that are coming along. And that's not just in Midlothian. It's in Edinburgh. It comes into
Sheriff Hall, and then up to the border. These are the areas getting on these trains first. And if the house numbers grow significantly, which they're projected to, the increased carriages that you're putting on here will not even deal with that. Now, we've just heard Jamie actually say one of the things that we're all very much aware of, that there are numerous people getting on the trains in the Midlothian area and they're not being counted because there's no fare being paid for them. Because they're that busy, most of the time the ticket collector can't get through to pay to collect the fares. Now, that's not just at peak times, that's during the day, that's at a 10 o'clock journey that I was on, that the same thing happened. So Midlothian are going to lose out on this. So I think we need to, as Russell says, been putting on a lot more pressure to be looking at not just a 50% increase, 75 off-peak and 150 at peak times. We need to be looking to be putting pressure on them to say there should be continual growth on this and therefore we should be planning that continual growth right now. I'll end by saying this. I think the Waverley Line in the entirety has been a very good success. It's very welcome by all the communities that it serves. Midlothian would just like it to be a wee bit more committed to actually servicing the people of Midlothian.
Councillor Coventry.
Thanks, Provost. I just want to state that I welcome the substantially higher passenger use than what was predicted, but I also want to highlight another couple of points. Well, one of which definitely has not been mentioned here this afternoon, and that is a bonus for positive destinations here in Midlothian. There's increasing numbers of young people accessing college courses, not only at Edinburgh College at the Milton Road campus, but down at Borders College. Everything from construction, childcare, gamekeeping, a whole range of different courses, and it's easily accessible now for many of our communities here in Midlothian. So that's one of the benefits. But I also want to touch upon something that my colleague Russell Imrie mentioned. It's vitally important that the Borders Rail benefits not only the communities on the Borders corridor, but it's vitally important that it benefits all the communities in Midlothian and the communities up and down the A701 corridor that I represent along with Kelly and Russell. You know, this is a huge bonus for Midlothian and it's something that should be welcome, and it's been a great success and let's build on it now, you know. Thank you.
Right, Councillor Rosie, and then we'll have a break, I think.
Right. I suppose I better say something. Just one thing I would agree with Councillor Milligan on is when he refers to it as the Waverley Line. I like that one better than the Borders Rail. But anyway, can I say, as regards the hop-on, hop-off bus, I thought you were a pal, a friend, Russell, you know what I mean? There was an opportunity to apply for the money from the Blueprint Group, and can I maybe correct Councillor Milligan in that it's not 64,000, we got half the money from the Blueprint Group towards it, so it was half of that, so it certainly wasn't anywhere near that. And can I also point out, to link it in with Lothian Bus's proposals as regards the 40 and the 39, I mean, it's ridiculous. I mean, that amount of money there would not help. In retaining the services the changes, it would not alter that have been made by Lothian or are planned, planned by Lothian Buses. But we got half the money, as I say, from the Blueprint Group, and this was an attempt to enhance the footfall of our tourist attractions within Midlothian, and it was supported by the Tourism Forum. They wanted this, and there's no doubt that the venture was not as successful as we would have wished, but if you don't try to improve things, then you're not going to progress at all. And the hop-on bus has been very successful in places like the Borders, Falkirk, and as we know, most certainly in Edinburgh. So it has been a success in other places. And we have got a substantial amount of visitors that do come to the Midlothian attractions. And I'm sure all the councils throughout the UK have made decisions that have not been successful, including this one, as Russell has said. And we have to learn and continue to encourage tourists to visit Midlothian. And after all, we are on the border of one of the biggest tourist magnets in Europe, if not the world. And I feel we don't really milk that enough. And I just have to ask the Labour group are proposing that we don't try anything new, and we've got to maximise the tourist industry. Further, I notice, please note, this was always going to be a six-month pilot. We're reviewing it, we've assessed it, and the evidence is, OK, it didn't work, so we're not extending it. Thank you.
OK, we're happy with the Chief's consideration that we'll keep up a dialogue with Abelio and accept this report. Thank you. We intend taking a 10-minute comfort break here.